Yes, you're wrong. The podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your guests, Shelby and Matt.
No, we're the hosts, Shelby, not the guests.
We're your hosts. We don't
have anymore, really, because we're lazy.
The wicked. If you take Shelby and Matt and you turn it upside down, you get
WS. Madam Morble, MM. Flip it around. Wicked Witch. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Wicked for Good has it really was not making the memes. Like in the lead up to it, we did not get the same
space,
number,
yeah.
The holding space and all of that kind of stuff. But really in the movie itself and I don't know, the internet's taking to it afterwards. There have been some incredible memes, the best of which is the supercut of Michelle Yeoh doing a bit where she says, Madam Morble, MM, flip it around. What is that? Wicked Witch, to seemingly every outlet that would talk to her. And I don't know how I didn't see like any of these when they were airing live, but post the movie coming out, I saw all 20 of these clips of her saying this, and it is just an incredible meme. And it's funny because I saw a tweet, like, people do not like Michelle Yeoh in this movie, and or in this both of these movies. They think that she's miscast and that she can't sing and she's bad. But I saw a couple of...
One of those facts is true. Yeah, one of those statements is the truth.
No, I mean, I think a lot of those statements are true. But I saw a tweet that was like, you know what? This is so funny, this meme, that I am like, now I'll allow her to be in this. I'm great. And
this
here's
is what
my not hot take about Madam Morble. Like, it's not it's not a great character in the Broadway show. She sings the first part of One Short Day, which is annoying, and you skip through. She has a couple of lines and other things. Like, it does not matter.
You already have it all wrong. She sings the opening.
Oh, The Wizard and I.
The Wizard and I.
Yes, The Wizard
and
I. And
then, thank goodness, she has a bit.
But she doesn't. She does not have like a full song that is herself. She does not need to be that great of a singer. I'm like, in the pantheon of actors who can only kind of sing playing roles in musicals, this is very unoffensive to me. We have seen musicals where the lead is played by somebody who cannot sing.
Les Mis. Yeah.
Nobody can sing.
I was going to say, alternatively, though, in today's day and age, like, just help the girl out in post, you know? Like, if Zac Efron can carry a tune with Zendaya in Greatest Showman, then you should be able to make, you know, Michelle Yeoh sound a little bit better. Like, layer those vocals, babe. Like, just give someone a little behind-the-scenes kick, you know? Like, I just think they could have protected her more. They could have
The K-pop Demon Hunter thing where you just have another person come in to do the singing.
Exactly. Singing in the rain. She's just in the background doing a good good cover. I think they did her dirty with that. Because this, unfortunately, like in Wizard and I, they just kind of let her talk through it, which worked for the song because she's just kind of building up to allow Elphaba to take over. But there are moments in this one where she has to sing full lines and it's painful. It was bad. And that's sad because they could have just done a little tweaking, given her that, you know, Taylor Swift treatment, whatever you want. There are ways. There are ways. And it's offensive they didn't.
Well, but I also would like to call it misogyny because I think that Jeff Goldblum is equally bad at singing and does have a full song in this that they had to have Ariana Grande sing alongside him to try to hide the fact that he's
That's
so bad
true.
At singing.
That's
and
true.
There's a lot less attention going to Jeff Goldblum. Is
Very
it because
true.
He's a man?
Yes.
I think so.
And there's
and
a
what
charm
do you, flip,
to the wizard.
Man,
yeah.
Flip that around. What is it?
Wicked
Witch.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Thank you for bringing that
of course,
spotlighting that. I think that's important and proof that we're the right people to talk about this movie.
Yes.
So I appreciate that. I will say, I saw your review when you first watched this, and I think it highlighted something that bothered me about the general acceptance of this film. It's the pile-on culture. It's sort of the, you know what, we've all decided collectively to hate this thing. And I think it was annoying with this film in particular because I feel like we were all wiser about it, right? Like, we know the second half of this musical is not good. Like, I feel like that was an accepted perspective. And so the, like, about face to be like, wow, this is trash, is like, whoa, babes, like, you knew that going in. Like, the story struggles. And do I think that they made missteps in how they could have tackled that better? Sure. But I do feel like once you start kind of hammering down on a girl when she's already down, I struggle because I saw too many tweets and TikToks that were like, you can see her eyelashes. And it's like, guys, of course she's wearing fake eyelashes. Like, why do we think that Oz doesn't have fake eyelashes? Or like, you know, we could see the sunlight through their acrylics, and that just like really took me out of the film. Sex robe, the sex cardigan. It's okay, like, guys, I cannot take you seriously if this is your main critique. If this is how far it's going, you're just like loving to hate on every piece of this film, then you suddenly lose credibility to me as a critic.
I would like to say this about the sex cardigan of it all. I watched this movie at the premiere. Mm-hmm. So I had not read anything about the sex cardigan when I saw it.
Right.
And I was like so shocked by it in that scene that is what me and my friend were talking about after we, like, when we were getting pizza after the movie. And I had not heard about that from anybody else beforehand. So I do think that that is a genuine talking point. I will say, yes, there has been a lot of piling on, I think, of, oh, Wicked for Good is bad. But I sort of think that some of that is the fault of the movie or the marketing, where, so when they announced that Wicked was going to be in two parts, which, I mean, somebody can go back and find that episode when that was announced, because we talked about it then.
Yeah.
This is a bad idea. Why would you, like, agree. I mean, well, yes, but like, this is a bad idea. The first half is way better. All the good songs are in the first half. The second half is shorter. It's a lot more depressing. It has less songs. Like, what are you going to do with that? You're going to have to build it up, because the second act is only like 45, 50 minutes.
Yeah.
And how do you make that a full 2-hour movie? Like, you're having to double the amount of time that you're spending at the very least with these characters in this song. Or in this act.
In this act, yeah.
The first Wicked came out, which I think most people liked more than they thought they were going to. It was received very well. Yes, there were some issues with the lighting or whatever, but people liked the performances. People liked Ariana Grande's performance, even though there had been, you know, some issues with that when the casting came out, because she's not really like a Broadway person necessarily in the same way. And so I was like, oh, they clearly did a good job with part one. Maybe they'll do a good job with part two. It's a trickier task, but, like, you know, maybe they're up to it. Then it's announced, oh, there's two new songs. They're going back to the book, maybe, to add some extra details. The early press screenings of this, like, out in LA, were basically only for influencers and people who were obsessed with Wicked. There were these tweets, oh, it's actually better than the first half. It's so good. It's mesmerizing. Like, it's so, like, the way that they did it, so innovative. And I was like, oh, there is a lot of room in the second act of the musical. If you're filling that out and you're turning 50 minutes into 2 hours and 15 minutes, there's a lot of extra space. Maybe they did do some really cool, interesting, creative things. Maybe the new songs are good. Maybe they integrated the Wizard of Oz, or they made Dorothy more of a character, or they sort of explained things a bit better. Like, I think there was a lot of I was kind of like, well, maybe they did pull off something really incredible here, and I'm going to have to give my props to them for that. Then I watched the movie, and it's like, oh, not only is this, does this have all of the problems of the second act of the musical, but by separating it and stretching it out, it somehow makes those problems worse and adds new problems into the mix into a way that I think
name 20 Matt, honestly
name 20? Name 20 I can name 20 but I think that the second movie is worse than the second act of the musical, and so but I do think that there were a group of people who were sort of like, wait a second, like either let down or kind of were like, you said that this was better than the first half. Like, no, now I have to get out my pitchfork and kind of tear this down. Yeah,
just a gleefulness.
Yeah, which, I mean, it's always a little bit fun to take down a giant corporate juggernaut. Like, I'm seeing Avatar 3 tonight, and if that's bad, I will have equal glee in sort of picking that apart. But yeah, I do think that then there has been a sort of pile-on effect of like, oh, it's cool to hate Wicked now, that I've seen going back to the first movie, and I'm like, no. The first movie was great. Like we can't, like, yes, there's some weird lighting things, but like, other than that, let's not go back and try to say that that's bad. I think that, you know, I think that in the end, this turned out to be exactly the situation that we thought it would when they announced that it was going to be split into two movies. Mm-hmm. We just went on quite a journey in the middle of that.
So much hope. Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched this over Thanksgiving, and I was like, I was engaged. I liked it all up until the end. Like, I was like, you know what? Everyone's hating on this too hard. I feel like there were definitely things that should have been fixed or explored or slowed down or whatever. But I liked visually, I was engaged, I felt like it moved fast. But then after For Good, with their whole like fake out endings with Glinda, I was like, no, we missed the mark here, and I do not enjoy this. I do not feel good about this anymore. And that was kind of a bummer, because up until then, I was like, you know what? I think this isn't as bad as people are saying. And so it's kind of weird, because in some ways I stand by that. But then in other ways, it's like, well, the ending is the closing thesis of the story. And they botched it so bad for me personally, like trying to give Glinda this like For Good makeover. And it was just like rushed and kind of like unearned and weirdly icky with the dynamics between Glinda and Elphaba and real power versus, you know, pretense and all of this. So it was like, I don't feel great about it anymore. And I wish I could just talk about how I love watching Jonathan Bailey turn his head to the side and stare longingly at a woman's body. But I can't, because now I have to talk about how, you know what, Glinda isn't the hero of this story and never was. And so them shoving it down our throats that she's like had this hero arc was very annoying, very frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, I think my sort of thesis on this movie is that I think that when you watch it on stage, which I did just a couple of months ago because my sister was in town and we went to go see it. So I was like, okay, this is good prep for when the movie comes out. When you watch it on stage, like the second act is like, yes, it doesn't have that many good songs in it, but it has a couple of good songs, and it's short and it's really packed together, and there's a lot going on in there that you can kind of gloss over some of the things that don't really make sense, or the fact that it's like, well, wait a second, like, is Glinda like actually like, they sing For Good, and in some ways you kind of want to think that they're both good people, but like, actually maybe Glinda sort of was bad all along. You know, like, there's some moral ambiguities and stuff that just because you're going through it so quickly, you kind of get to the end and, you know, everybody's standing and applying. You're like, okay, wait. Yeah, yes. Good. And not only that, but you're riding high off all of the stuff from the first half act, and you're still thinking about Defying Gravity and all of that. I think with the second movie, like, one, if you haven't watched the first movie in a while, like that's sort of in the very far back rearview mirror. And then also it's just so much longer that it gives you a lot of time to think through all of the sort of like weird decisions or plot holes.
Did they ever graduate college?
Like just all of these questions that you have, and you're and you have a lot more time to sit with them and think about them, of like, what is going on with the lion? Like, why is, like, dude's obviously we had to get a lion in here because we needed it for the, you know, Wizard of Oz of it all. But like, really, that plot line, like, does not make any sense.
Yeah, I feel like if I was a townsperson and the lion's like, she freed me from a cage, I'd be like, bro, am I on the wrong side here? Like, what is this lion talking about?
And then like, oh, that Bach and Fiero like spent, I don't know, a week together on a road trip. And it's like, none of you didn't realize that you guys knew each other and like were friends.
Yeah, I haven't seen the musical in a decade. And I haven't like read the book ever. So I was like, the number one question for me, because I am a Jonathan Bailey stan, was, what the heck is Fiero's problem here? Because what do you mean he's about to get married? Like, what do you mean? Like, because that's not in the play, right? It's not their wedding day, is it? Isn't it just like their engagement party or something?
Yeah, I don't, I'm trying to remember. I don't, I can't, like
yeah, it wasn't as noticeable.
Yeah, there definitely is the element of like, okay, they are together and he's unhappy and then he, you know, like goes off with Elphaba. Like, I don't know if it, I can't remember if it's a wedding day or an engagement party or they're just sort of like, you know, dating or whatnot.
Because he doesn't look great when you lay it out like this, because it's been, you know, whatever time constraint they say, 11 moons or something at the beginning, whatever that means. So it's like, either we're looking at like a year, it seems like, since the ending of the first film. And with that in mind, it's like, okay, number one, this culture is way too fast to forget about like Elphaba's origin story. You all should know it. But then you have Fiero, who's like clearly pining for Elphaba, but is also willingly getting married to Glinda. And that doesn't look good. That's an F-boy move.
If I'm remembering correctly from the musical, which maybe is also in the movie, like he's like off on these expeditions looking for Elphaba. So it's like he's in a relationship with Glinda, but he doesn't really see her very often. And you're kind of wondering if him looking for Elphaba is like to find her and arrest her, or is really just like he's in love with her and he's trying to find her. And while he, and it's like he doesn't really have the heart to break up with Glinda / it would not be good for his, you know, like social capital or whatever until he finds Elphaba. Once he finds her, then he's like planning on ditching Glinda. Right. But like until then, he's like, I actually don't know where this woman is that I'm in love with her.
Messed up behavior.
Right, yes. No.
And so having it play out so dramatically and extended in the movie, you're left with a lot of time to be like, wow, is Fiero kind of an asshole, like, to dump Glinda in this way? And, like, I feel like that's something they could have explained better. Because, frankly, I did, like, again, I didn't see the play, so I don't know how much dialogue was, like, added. But they get sort of engaged, and he's like, what are you talking about? Why are we getting engaged? And they have this sort of, like, what the internet calls a lavender kiss, where they're both clearly not into each other, but they're, like, just going along with it. And I'm like, you know what? I like this vibe. But then once it was like, oh, I'm getting married tonight, I was like, oh, no. And then Fiero's like, Fiero seems very impulsively to choose Elphaba and run off with her and immediately have their sexy moment together. And I thought that was interesting and sort of like a good example of kind of how, like you said, this movie maybe drew attention to some of the problems in the play that you could kind of gloss over or ignore in the like rush of the moment. But like having them overemphasize like how much Oz has accepted Glinda as the good, and they have all these flyers and she's their spokesperson and everyone wants to go to her wedding and she's the wizard's right-hand man. And what do you mean Madame Morrible is now the press secretary instead of just a professor at this college? It does start to pull at the seams a little bit, and you are kind of distracted by the timing of this story, and the ask becomes too large to suspend disbelief in various ways. Well,
it's like you have the ending, which, or not the ending necessarily of the of the musical, but like you have this end point of the Wizard of Oz plot line that you have to get to, and then you have the beginning where you set up these characters of Glinda and Elphaba sort of like in a world completely separate for the most part of the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
And I think there comes a point in the middle of that where they have to start like putting square pegs in round holes, and these characters start doing things where you're like, wait a second. I don't know if that, like, I don't think that that character would do that way or act in that way, but they sort of have to in order to get the plot pieces where they need to be. And so I think there's just a lot of space in this where you're focused on that. Like, for example, when, like, the movie opens with Elphaba basically taking out like an entire legion of people who are trying to, you know, make the Yellow Brick Road. And also it's like, wait, the Yellow Brick Road is now like a metaphor for what, like corporate consumerism or something. But the, also you have, but so Elphaba like has all these powers, and you see them over and over and over again. And then you get to this scene where the guards are like gonna take Fiero away, and she's like, oh wait, I actually now have no powers to be able to save him. Like, I have to just let him go and let him become this scarecrow, or like the only way I can help him is to turn him into a scarecrow. And it's like, yeah, well, that actually makes no sense within this world. Like, obviously we need him to be the scarecrow for the Wizard of Oz storyline,
yeah,
but how he is getting there really makes no sense. Like, yeah, she could have saved him. He could have done something that, like, there was,
she
just
told
so
him
many...
to stay put, and then he, right, uselessly, like, right, or you don't need, yeah, to be here.
And I think there's just a lot of that also with Glinda, where it's like, okay, if she's so close with Elphaba, like, yes, she doesn't have powers, and yes, she is sort of like wanting to keep the peace, and I think to a certain, yeah, degree, like, likes the attention that's coming with the wizard, but she goes along with it to a degree that seems unlikely, yeah, like, for her as a character.
Like, yeah,
yeah, it's like she either needs to get worse in the second act, where she's sort of like completely unredeemable and is like, no, I want the power. I will do what, yeah, I need to. And if it means betraying you, I will betray you. I want the power. I want to be the next wizard. Or she needs to be like, hey, like, the wizard's a bad person.
Right.
Like, she's seen too much to sort of have the naive, attitude that she does in the, yeah, first movie. And I think, well, there's just a lot of those kinds of things.
Yeah. It's like, she can have a moment of realization, but it is hard to then very quickly move on from that and be the perky girl who's burning the bonfire from the first movie. Like, it's like, it was confusing to have it so compacted time-wise, where she sings A Girl in a Bubble. Well, honestly, the whole movie felt like it took place over the course of 4 days, maybe, because it's like, oh, you're here at my wedding. Like, let's sing, what is the wizard song? Wonderful. And then you find out all this information, and then you crash my wedding, and then my boyfriend runs off with you, and then you make love with him, and then you come back, and it's the tornado, and it's all in the same night. Like, it's all in the same 24 hours.
Yes.
And so then Glinda's supposed to get this moment where she sings like The Girl in the Bubble, which as a song, I didn't necessarily mind, but I do feel like it wasn't earned,
yes,
in her arc then. And then that was compounded when the rest of the movie is her getting everything she wants and not having to own up to any of her part in it, because her friend is dead and sort of forgave her and told her it was okay to let her be this martyr of villainy. And that just didn't ring true, because the entire first half of this movie is Elphaba's song being No Place Like Home, where she's like, well, I'm going to fight for this place. And then it's like, JK, never mind. You guys are the worst and I'm leaving. But like, Glinda, I hope you get everything you ever wanted. And so that's just kind of like, you're left with this icky feeling of like, well, wait, what are we supposed to feel here? Like, is this triumphant for Elphaba to be on the run and for another person without power to hold herself up because of society's projections upon her? Like, it's like, this is just the same problem. It's just with someone you happen to like more.
I also did not like the message of there's no place like home. Like, yeah. It felt a little, I don't know, it rubbed me the wrong way that Elphaba, who has all of these powers, is like, hey, you persecuted people. Like, yeah. Stay here in this place that's terrible for you just because it's like your home.
Right.
It's like, yeah. Well, you don't understand the plight of these. Like, they would stay if they could, but they are being persecuted, like, so they are fleeing. And why would you, like, advocate for them to stay here, yeah. Just, like because this is a place that you have, like, a nostalgic connection,
yeah.
For?
Yeah.
Like, yes, home is important, but home is where you hang your hat, according to, yeah. The proverb. And you can find that with people that you love wherever you go, even if you have to burrow under the yellow brick road, which those makes total giraffes. Sense.
Those giraffes showed up and they're like, oh fuck, I can't fit in this. How am I supposed to get down on all four, crawl through this hole to who knows where? Yeah, no, it was kind of irksome. And then to have that immediately followed up with the wonderful, it's like, oh, okay, so Elphaba doesn't have the same strength of character as she presumes, which is an interesting concept if they were to really play with that, but they don't. They allow her to be this like perfect moral character because once she sees like it's like, what do you mean, like, you got everything you wanted and so now you can side with the wizard? Like, I like the idea of it being tantalizing, but for her to quickly be like, oh, okay, you freed the monkeys, great, we'll do this. It's like, well, wait, I think you should be more suspect of this guy who already promised you everything you wanted and is clearly like driven to do that. And so it didn't feel as like true to the characters they set up in the first one to then spend all this time giving them more to chew on, but having it kind of, I don't know, go nowhere substantial.
I also am like, what were they actually spending this runtime on? Because, yeah. I feel like you get to the end of the movie and it's like, you didn't really learn that much, or it didn't about anybody. And it, yeah. Doesn't really feel like it spent that much time with any of these characters, but it's not like there's that many characters. And it's not like this was a short movie,
yeah.
But like Nessa and Bach and Fiero are all sort of like, there are these characters who could be really complex and interesting, but they're given so little time. And then, yeah. Even Elphaba and Glinda, it feels like, what were they doing this whole time? Like, you get to the end of the movie and it's like, what did I, like, where was the time spent? Because I know that I sat here for 2 hours and 17 minutes or however long it is,
yeah.
But I feel like I have watched a 22 minute episode of a TV sitcom before and felt like I've gotten more out of these characters than I did in this movie.
Well, it's like everything in the musical is in the movie, but then you struggle to remember what they added, you know, because it was like, okay, right. So we're hitting all the same points and they're all wrapped up in the same, like, you know, song and dance, literally, of the stage play, but you do have twice as much time. So it's like, this is all just in long shots of the yellow brick road or shadowed plays of Dorothy, right. or yeah. Weird dialogue between between.
No, it's like, I think, like, yes, I think, yeah. That is the answer.
They didn't like add any substantial.
No, there's two new songs. So, okay, yeah. Give that 10 minutes or whatever. But yeah. Then aside from that, yeah, there's not, yeah. Really anything new. Yeah. I mean, I guess we get some pictures of Elphaba in the sand dunes or whatever they're going at the end, like what's beyond the world, yeah. Of Oz,
yeah.
Which felt very like Game of Thronesy to me. I think that the problem with this movie was the script,
yeah.
And I think that there was sort of. I think that there were a lot of good aspects that are working positively in this mm-hmm. movie, but because the script is bad, yeah. it kind of never is able to figure that out. And I don't know how much of that is like a constraint of the original show yeah. and the music and right. and that and things you can't change, and how much of it is like,
but it like shouldn't be constrained, change. Which is weird. That's like yeah. what's so frustrating, because they did such a good job with the first one where they did like write a very sharp script and every word mattered and it was a lot of fun, and you had these characters jumping off the page, and even the like side characters like Bo and Yang were able to have fun moments. But then this, it's like it felt very vignette, like cobbled together, like the box storyline having the like drama of him trying to leave and realizing what she's done was good. But then it just cuts to what happens in the play, which is he has to show up at the wrong time and be cursed, and then he turns into the Tin Man. And it's like, wouldn't it have made more sense to give him like a sort of an actual dialogue with Nessa to be like, what the hell are you doing? What do you mean Munchkins can't leave? Like, don't you see yourself becoming this? But he doesn't ever like vocalize that. He's just like this sad sack of a man. And then his only like word of power is like, I have to go confess my feelings. It's like, boy, move on. Like, Glinda doesn't care about you. That shouldn't be your motivation at this point, when you're literally being terrorized by your government. Like,
right,
your soul like empowering moment shouldn't be, I'm gonna go tell her I love her. Like, that's just, it just doesn't ring true or interesting for someone who's literally just been told that they can't leave their town. Like, I think that could have been something interesting to play with. And like, true, I don't remember exactly how that dialogue works in the play, but I don't think it would have been a betrayal to the play to suss that out in a more interesting way, given how they gave him more to do in the first film.
Right. Well, or I think you could add some scenes of like this group of people with Dorothy and what their motivations for going on that expedition yeah. are. Like, why are they going? What are they doing? What are they trying to accomplish? Like, maybe there's something yeah. more interesting there that we get that we don't really see.
He just comes across as such an asshole. Like,
well, and they want to save that Fiero scarecrow reveal until the last yeah. second. So they constantly keep like ducking and weaving around that, which I again think is a disservice to the movie, because you right. don't understand what's going on and what yeah. and why Fiero was doing what he's doing.
And what did he send on his jacket, or what did the monkey bring at the end that she's like, you'll never see his face again? Like, was she aware that he was the scarecrow? Was she like aware and they had this plan to like reunite at this point? Like, that was confusing, because yeah. I don't know how it is in the play. But I felt like it was disjointed here, where they could have had like her discovering him as a scarecrow and being like, holy shit, what did I do? Like, we have to get out of here now. It's not worth it.
I mean,
but it wasn't. It was just like, la-di-da.
I think in the Broadway show, like, it is very similar to the movie, where it yeah. is kind of like out of left field a bit.
Yeah.
But I think because it's so fast and you're just like ripping right. through this stuff at the end, you're not really thinking about it. Because the yeah. other moment that I was really struck by was when Glinda tells Madame Morble, like, we need to use the sister yeah. as bait. Like, yeah. that's who she cares about. She cares about the sister. And then Madame Morble, who everybody knows since the first movie has this weather power, creates yeah. a tornado, which don't really happen in Oz and is very confusing to everybody. And then the tornado conveniently drops a house on Elphaba's sister. And Glinda is like unable to connect these dots yeah. and figure out what happened. And it's like, girl, this is your fault that this happened. Like, I felt like that is a moment that could be a character building moment mm-hmm, for her mm-hmm. of like, oh my gosh, this power, but this power ended up like, I've aligned myself with people who will kill Elphaba's sister just yeah. to maintain power. And I was friends with Nessa.
Yeah.
I knew Nessa. I like, this is the thing that's going to change for me, that's going to make me see a different light. But instead, because of the, you know, the way that they need the storyline to go, they have to make it out like she's completely dumb. And she's like, what? No, the house just randomly fell on your sister. Oh, but it has nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
And
it again, will give your shoes to this random girl. Right. Why not?
Yes. Yes. And then I gave the shoes away. Like, very confusing. And I don't.
Confusifying.
And I think that there's also a way that could be played where it's like she is sort of like willfully repressing the fact that she killed Nessa, but I don't think that is what is being conveyed in this movie either.
Yeah.
So,
and like, Elphaba's so chill. Elphaba's so chill about it. It's very weird. Like, on one hand, that was one of the funner scenes in the movie, is when they finally have their girl fight and they get to slap each other around and wrestle, and they're so good with their, you know, body, their physical comedy, that it's like, that's a fun scene. But when you step back and you're like, wait, her sister's literally dead under this building, like, what do you mean? Like, how does she not have any emotion for this right now, when we just watched her sing Defying Gravity for less, you know? Like, it's like,
right,
there should have been more anger. And I think that anger would have justified, oh, why she's leaving, oh, why she changed her tune about No Place Like Home, and oh, why she's willing to kind of accept Fiero's love as easily as she does. Like, but there wasn't, like, it remained very cheery, even though there was literally a body on the floor.
Right. Well, and then they very purposefully, I think, did not show the leg sticking out from under the house, which I was like, that's an iconic image. I don't understand why we're not doing that, other than, you know, just like, you didn't want it to be too violent or something. Although my alternative theory on this is that, so this movie's PG, and I do think that they were fighting tooth and nail to keep this PG rating, which I think might be why they didn't show the body under the house, and I think is also the reason why we got the sex card again. I think that is a big part of the reason why that feels so odd, is because, oh, like, I bet that they sort of wrote that scene.
She has sexy lingerie,
she does, but very, it's like, okay, we, yes, it's like, it need, like, we gotta make sure that this isn't too, like, scantily clad, so let's, like, give her this big, like, robe, basically, that she can wear over it.
I get cold, you know?
Right.
You aren't warmed up yet. You have to just, like, allow the robe.
Well, especially when you're having sex in a, like, breezy beaver dam and flying around while you're doing it. Like, that doesn't necessarily feel like a super warm and cozy experience.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, that's, I think that this is the other problem about this movie, is like, it had so much attention on it.
Yeah.
That now you and I are sitting here talking about it, and it's like, the longer I think about it, the more issues I have, the more things don't make sense, the more missed connections, and the more I'm sort of forgetting about the positive aspects of the movie that I did like, you know, that No Good Deed, I think, is a good song. Like, them singing For Good, the way that their voices work together, I think works really well. I've been listening to the cast album a lot since then, and I think in ways that the Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth version, like, doesn't, I don't know, those two people's voices are, like, louder and more sort of, like, jarring in some ways, where Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande's voices are so, like, silky smooth together that it really works. So there are a lot of positives about it, but it's like, the longer I sit here and think about this, the more I'm like, wait, none of these characters and their motivations make sense. The ending doesn't make sense. All of the choices they made along the way don't make sense. Like, the, like, literally every piece of the Wizard of Oz sort of saga makes no sense whatsoever. Yeah. Especially when you think about the fact that, like, okay, in the Wizard of Oz, she hits her head during the tornado and the whole thing is a dream. But then in
this musical should not exist.
But it's like, in this, it's a world, like, but she actually comes into it. So does that mean that there's, like, multiple dimensions? Like,
I think, or it's more,
is this another place?
I think the movie leaves it open-ended, where it doesn't have to be a dream. It's just, that's how she magically got home. Right?
Right. But that's, like, what I'm saying is, like, okay, if it's not a dream, like, then, like,
has neighbors who look like them.
Like, did the wizard and her, like, did they come from a separate sort of country that's adjacent, but we just don't know about it.
No, he came from Ohio.
Oh, yeah, right. But Oklahoma. Like, where is that? Is that, like, did they come through a different, like, a time hole? Like, you know?
It's a nonsense story, yeah.
Right.
And it's just, like, a cutesy tie-in. And it's like, yeah, the novel exists in a totally different realm. Like, I do not think Fierro turns into the Scarecrow in the first book, if I remember correctly. And so, yeah, there's a lot happening, big picture, that's like, this probably shouldn't have been as successful as it was because it doesn't hold up to snuff, but like, that's musicals. And I think that's true of what you were saying before, where it's like, if I made a supercut of this movie and I just like, if I kept the musical bits, I think I'd like it. Like, I think I'd rewatch the whole thing altogether, you know, like a 3-hour film I could get through and yes. I'd like it. But it starts to break under its own weight once you get to the For Good sequence, and Elphaba is like willingly keeping Glinda in the dark because Glinda's so sweet and naive and can't handle the truth or something. And she's like, please, just, you have to tell them I was bad so you can be good. And it's like, that makes no sense. Like, your whole motivation is the wizard lies and you think that the truth will free you. And now you've just suddenly decided no, and you're giving permission to this woman who's part of the system that has harmed you and everyone you claim to care about, and you're telling her that it's okay for her to continue with the act, and in fact, you endorse it, and like, yay, Glinda, you get to be Miss Popular. And then you spend the next 20 minutes with just Glinda getting to play, like, dress up and getting to play, like, the powerful one. She gets to say, oh, yeah, actually, the wizard, you go. And oh yeah, Madame Horrible, you're in jail. And it's like, well, is that all the problems? Like, no, there's a systemic issue here. And the movie decides to do this really cheesy thing where in the final moment, as it ties back to the opening scene of the first film where she sings, No One Mourns the Wicked, she's like, I'm going to go back and rule the roost from Emerald City because I don't care about you munchkins. And then the woman asked the question, like, well, weren't you her friend? And so all of that we'd seen before, but now she makes this like decision where she's like, and actually I have one more thing to say. And it's like, well, bitch, were you going to say that before? Like, oh, and then all the animals pop up and she's like, you're free. And it's like, all the people around him are like, yay. And it's like, that's not reality. That makes no sense. And it felt so cheesy and so unearned and unnecessary. And it completely does away with any sort of criticism of Glinda as a character and the question of moral good versus moral evil. And it's like, well, then what was this movie for? Like, that's what's annoying, is like, they are saying through their song, The Girl in the Bubble, well, as long as you open up your eyes, you can probably change the system from within and it's all good. And it's like, well, I don't think that's the story that's happening in a book where you need people in the dark in order to keep things running smoothly for the good. And it's like, well, that's not for the good. Like, that's just ignorance. And it's not, it's just like a frustrating,
no, frustrating
conclusion.
How it should, like, the for good of it all at the end should sort of be a moment where, like, Elphaba's arc is that she's a loner, and then she learns from Glinda that she can't be so judgmental of people, and she needs community, and she needs connection, and that's the thing that she learns, which is something that she learns throughout the course of the musical. And I think, like, her relationship with Fierro and whatever, like, those are all, like, clearly show that she has learned that lesson.
Yeah.
I think for Glinda, the lesson that she has to learn is, like, about being less selfish and about caring for others and about standing up for what is right, even if it's not necessarily going to be the best thing for you in that moment. And I think that that's a lesson that she kind of needs to learn, like, in hindsight of like, after she's made all of these mistakes and after all of these things have gone wrong and she does not get the happy ending that she wants, that is when she has the moment of reflection and she's like, not what they were trying to do with this movie.
Because I think, honestly, it wouldn't have worked because it's not as good a song as For Good. But I think the last song should have been The Girl in the Bubble. If that's the story they wanted to tell, then it should have ended with her coming back from the bonfire, the effigy burning, having told this story, and realizing like she doesn't like how she comes across in it. And she has to face that she's alone in this reflected mirror, like, and is like, oh, I should like wake up. Like, this isn't actually, I do not feel good here. And I think that could have been a better conclusion of like her going down and freeing Dr. Dillamond or whatever, like doing something where she has to break out of this like pretty perfect bubble. And that could have made it more of an earned awakening. But the way it plays out, where she sings that song first and then goes to rescue Elphaba, but ends up having Elphaba once again save her and set her up for success at her own cost, that just, yeah, it just makes her like another little childlike fairy who needs protecting and like who will just go flitzing through life enjoying her bubble parade. And so I think it's just like, if they wanted the message of like everyone can change and everyone can learn and be better, then they had to rearrange it somehow, but they weren't willing to sacrifice like the musical beats for that.
Well, also like Wicked sort of doesn't end. It's not like it ends on a super happy note, but they obviously wanted it to end that way for the movie, which I think is hard, which is kind of like the issue with the Great Gatsby musical, where you're like, oh, all these parties, whatever, it'll be a fun musical. And then you're like, wait a second. Actually, the ending of the Great Gatsby is really depressing. So how are we going to do this? Yeah, I think that this movie has a lot of different issues. And I think it would be better if you chop the new songs and sort of shorten everything and made it one movie that's like 3 hours and 15 minutes rather than these two separate movies. Yeah. Because I think that the first half of the movie is going to do so much heavy lifting if it's all one entity. Yeah. But when it's broken up into two parts, the first half is incredible and the second movie is a little bit ho-hum. However, we are currently under threat of multiple Wicked spin-offs.
Of course, you can't look a gift horse in the mouth, you know, like, of course they're going to.
I'm like, this is just so bad. Like, okay, yes, to be fair, the book series, there are like 8 books or whatever. So there technically is material that can be used. So it's not completely out of left field, but the musical is only the musical. Based on the two new songs that were created for this musical, I don't have a lot of hope for the songs that would be created for a whole separate musical. And I'm like, the story, it feels like to me, has been told, and you didn't handle this that well. I don't know why we would trust the same creative team to do a better job with, you know, a Dr. Dillamond spinoff or whatever.
Well, and it won't be the same team. It'll be NBC trying to make a buck off of their pre-made set or whatever. It won't be John Chu or whoever who really put a lot of heart into it.
Oh, yes. Like, John Chu, I think, for whatever is going on with the lighting design, like did an admirable job. I think that the problem, to some degree, is Winnie Holtzman and Stephen Schwartz. Who, you know, were the ones who were kind of in charge of all of this. And I think those are the people who will be, who, you know, have made statements about whatever sequel or spinoff or prequel or whatever they're going
to
work on. And I'm like,
to be relevant.
And I'm like, you guys seem like the ones who were the issue. Because John M. Chu did not write the screenplay for this. Like, he was the director, but it was Winnie Holzman who wrote the book for the Broadway show. And then Dana Fox, who wrote the script for this.
So it was like, I do think they should have made it one film. And that's hard to say as someone who really liked the first movie and thinks it's a really good movie. It's hard to imagine them shoving all this in there. But I don't think it stands well enough on its own. And it's a pity because there are good performances. Like you said, vocally, Jonathan Bailey, Ariana Grande, Cynthia Erivo are all serving, and it's all really pleasant to listen to. But it does just start to rankle as the story gets more and more tangled. Like, it's like, and it's also confusing because yeah, the Wizard of Oz of it all is like, okay, so what happens to the Tin Man and the Lion? Like, you don't get closure, even though they're the ones singing about wanting to kill Elphaba. And then, the Scarecrow reveal. It's like, damn, I don't know how they could have prepared it better, but it did not come across as great when he's like, do you think I'm ugly? And she's like, no, I just see you differently. It's just also, like, yeah.
I realize that is a line from the musical.
Yes.
But I'm like, in the year of our Lord 2025, I don't love that like connotation of like, okay, so you are actually ugly, but I still like you anyways. It's like, no, we should not be saying that, you know, someone who is, you know, was in an accident or something is ugly. And you know, like, oh,
well,
you're
what does he say? He says, like, she says, I'm not, you don't have to lie. And he says, it's not a lie. I'm just looking it's at like things differently.
Yeah. Or something like that. But it's not, he's not saying, no, you are beautiful. Or I think you're beautiful.
Right.
He's saying, he's basically saying, like, yes, you are correct, but in spite of you being correct, I still, whatever. Which I don't like that. I'm anti that, especially in the age of Ozempic, where I think we're having all kinds
Not to talk about bodies, but especially in the age of Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande and Michelle Yeoh traipsing across carpets looking very, very thin and unhealthily so. And yeah, I mean, I agree. There was some groans in the audience for that, but I did like As Long As You're Mine. Okay, I'm sorry. I liked it. I think they did a good job with it.
Oh, I thought that was good. No. I think
when really he took off his suspenders, I was like, replay it, roll it back.
I think are all, with the exception of the two new songs, I think all of the new musical sequences are good. And you know what I think is maybe the best part about this are the reprises that they added from the first movie into that opening sequence that are not in the that are not in the musical.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's what they should have been doing more of in this, is if you want to add a new song or whatever, like give us another chorus of One Short Day or something like that, that can sort of spin things on its head rather than give us these two new insipid songs that are so dull and nobody wants
and no choreo. It's like, at least let
and
someone
no
dance.
Choreo.
At least someone,
no choreo.
Someone needs to dance a new number.
Like,
where was Going Yang?
Well, him and Fofo or whatever her name is, they're his sidekick. She's long gone. We as a society did not give credit where credit was due for In the Heights. I'm like, that is an incredible movie musical with so much choreography, so many great voices. Like, those characters are so well constructed and they stick with you and they all have interesting backstories. They feel so lived in. I'm like, Lin-Manuel Miranda, like, really is doing something and we don't give him credit enough for it. even Hamilton. I'm like, Hamilton is so good. Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Well, and that's the thing, is if they'd combined these movies, they could have ended on a reprise of Defying Gravity, and then we would have had a better ending. And I think that's too bad, because now we got a freaking Grimmery opening up for Glinda. It's like, you don't have magic, girl. Like, please stop trying to pretend you are Elphaba. You're not. I did not like the ending of this movie.
Well, and if she was going to open the Grimmery, at least we could have ended on a reprise of Alakala, or whatever. But no. It feels like, as we've talked about this, you like Wicked for Good about the same amount as I do.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if it's streaming, I'll probably fast forward. But I still like enjoyed the musical parts. It's just that it really rubbed me the wrong way how they ended it with Glinda as this like hero. I didn't know.
No, I'll be listening to the cast album. Yeah. However, I will say they did, some of these songs on the cast album are too long. Like, they needed to chop off the first.
Deed.
Like, yes, it's, I'm like, what is this? The intro to Thank, or the intro the intro to For Good is like a minute and a half of dead air. I have to fast forward to the middle of the song every single time. I'm like, does this even count for my Spotify rap? Yeah. I don't even know. Yeah.
Also, what was the deleted scene? Like, they had a full set of Glinda in that pretty pink cupcake dress with a full, like, matching child's choir. And it's like, what were they doing with that? I want to know. Like, what did they take away and leave us with this for, you know?
I don't even know what you're referencing. Exactly. There's, like there's people, a photo of,
there's
like
a big photo. It's from the trailer. And then people were obsessed with the costume because it really is a gorgeous costume. But there seemed to be an extensive set piece in Munchkin Land with her in this outfit and like a full to-do around her. And yet it was never in it. And so a lot of people are like, what are these deleted scenes? Like, what was cut that we didn't get here? And so it's just interesting to think about like how much they shot and yet this is what they came away with.
Well, you know what she was probably doing? She was in the Amazon with my mom when she was researching spiders right before she died.
A random callback.
Well, no, because that was in the trailer and got cut from the movie. Oh, remember?
Oh,
remember?
Okay, when yeah, that, I
the
see
most
now,
infamous
yeah.
Madame Web line yeah, was chopped right. from the movie yeah. for some reason or another.
I did love the poster callback as the final shot of them in the field.
I sort of did, but I was like, what is this white, like,
I loved it, a hoodie is iconic.
It was so ugly because what because no! I'm like, what?
It was very cool.
I'm like, Wicked poster. I'm like, what is she wearing on the, oh, she has like a, yes. she has like a white hat on yeah. of some kind
yeah.
yeah. I'm like you couldn't have given her a hat. Instead, she's wearing like a scarf. It's so ugly.
No,
I thought it was ugly,
no.
And it didn't have the same silhouette. I wanted whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, well, Ariana stole that from set. She said so. Maybe yes, you'll see her out and about we did on know the street that. In it.
Have you purchased any? I guess to wrap up, have you purchased any Wicked? brand tie-in items.
No.
Because I was at the grocery store and saw like Wicked
Tide
like, Blade air freshener.
Yes. Insane. Like,
yes.
Insane.
Like,
the corporate synergy yes. happening.
The Wicked Chili's yeah. drinks, the Wicked Dunkin' Donuts collaboration.
Oh, Rob yes. did buy an Owala water bottle for a penny. The Alphabet oh, okay. Owala. But That's it.
Is Penny and more of an Alphaba than a Glinda?
No, she loves... Did I say Alphaba?
Yes.
She got the Glinda bottle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. Good. We're raising her. She'll grow up like me. As we can hope for. Okay, well, this has been lovely. I'm glad we got to talk about this. I feel like we have so much to discuss these next couple weeks because we have the new Avatar coming out. We've got the Stranger Things finale, final season, which I feel like we have to cover
yeah,
for
well,
better
that's in,
or
like,
worse.
2 months, so.
Well, no, because that comes out January 3rd or December 31st, I think.
But there's three.
Yeah, it's Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. But New Year's is just one episode.
Yeah, okay. Oh, it is? That's hilarious.
I'm pretty sure.
I hate this rollout. It's annoying.
No, it's so annoying, and I can't wait to talk about it more. Yeah. You know what we could talk about next week? Five Nights at Freddy's 2. We love the first one so much.
I'm looking forward to that. Josh Hutcherson, yay. Your boyfriend.
But there's also... We could talk about Zootopia 2. We could talk about Hamnet. We could talk about when does the new Knives Out movie come out on Netflix?
Oh,
that's at some point.
I haven't seen any press about that.
Oh, that's not till December 12th.
Yeah.
I think it's out in theaters now, theoretically. Mm.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. There's lots of options. Oh, we could do an
Eternity.
Episode next week. I loved Eternity. Let's do an episode on that. I feel like there's a lot to talk about there.
Okay.
Okay. Next week, Eternity, and then we can do Knives Out, and then we can do Avatar, and then we can do Stranger Things. Fun. Oh, and then there's also Marty Supreme in there somewhere as well.
So organized.
This is the perfect time of year. Then we get into January and it's really going to be like nothing. I guess we'll have the Oscar nominations at some point as well. So yes. Well, thanks everyone for listening. And we'll be back next week. Talk to you guys later. Bye.